Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
It is the Brett Winterbull Show. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. And our phone number 704-570-1110. It is terrific to be here with you. It is the final day of the week. It is the 20th anniversary of the last normal day we had. And that was 20 years ago today, September the 10th. We had no idea what was going to be coming at us in a matter of hours. And it's important to think back about how America used to be. And I don't mean like in a wistful way, I miss the good old days. I'm talking about how it used to be, how you were when you weren't the subject of surveillance. You could go to the airport with your kids, and your kids could greet the grandparents coming off the jetway, or greet the parents after a business trip coming off the jetway. That's all important stuff. The thrill of a lifetime when you were a kid to go to the airport was to stand there and wait with excitement for the next person to come off the plane. And is grandma going to be next? And who's going to be, oh, where are they? I don't see them. I can't see them. And standing up against the glass and looking out at the different airplanes taking off and landing. That's what we used to do. That used to be the way it was. The greatest problem when it came to flying wasn't whether or not you had a mask. It was whether or not you were going to get accosted by Moonies selling flowers and all sorts of things like that. I remember fondly the good old days of the Lyndon LaRouche wackos approaching me at the airport. And all that ended. All that ended in the tragedy and in the carnage that was September the 11th. In so many ways, our world was inexorably altered. It was changed permanently. A scar was driven into the entirety of the world. It wasn't just the United States of America. And there's a lesson in this, and I'm going to get into this in greater detail as the program unfolds. I'll be with you right up till 6 o'clock, and then I will be in for Mark Garrison on Charlotte at 6. Mark is doing news today. Anna is out, and we will keep you up to date on all the big comings and goings. And there's a lot of stuff to talk about. People still want to digest what it was that was said by the president last night. Many people taking extreme umbrage and exception with his tone. It didn't feel like a democratically little d elected president talking to the people who he represents. It felt like somebody giving us a lecture about why we're rotten. And that is a tone that most Americans do not accept. I don't accept that tone from the president last night, saying essentially that his patience was worn out, that they've had it, and now we're going to get it. I don't roll like that. My presidents don't talk to me that way. I'm a free person. You're a free person. We are taxpayers. We are American citizens. We are entitled to be spoken to with respect. And because the president of the United States has a poll number right alongside athlete's foot, that's not our fault. That's not our doing. That's the president's doing. The president made a lot of decisions coming into this time period. He chose to refer to the Taliban as businesslike partners. He allowed them to keep the hostages that are still there. And I don't care whatever Jen Psaki wants to call them. They're hostages. He opened the border wide. He shut down the gas pipeline, the Keystone XL pipeline. He appointed a boob to be the shadow president in Ron Klain, who is an absolute incompetent. I mean, an absolute incompetent, a man who has never held an important position outside of Washington, D.C. His entire life is Washington, D.C. And President Biden, with no due respect to anybody out there who's listening, except for those who want to really hear the truth. No, I respect all you guys. I'm just joking. The fact of the matter is he's got a substandard cabinet. He's got a substandard team around him. He's got retreads who have been in Washington, D.C. for 40, 50, 60, 70, whatever the number of years is that they've been in there. And you have to understand that every one of them in that administration thinks you're the problem. You are the problem. You, the taxpayer, you're greedy. You, the healthy person, you're entitled. You, the person who lives in a house, you're denying somebody else your house. You're denying somebody else your graduation. You're denying all of that stuff. All of that stuff. And the fact of the matter is, we are in a place of our own making. Because people voted for this man to become the president of the United States, and he got elected running on a campaign that looks nothing like reality. I'm going to be the president of everybody. I'm going to represent you even if you didn't vote for me. I'm going to build back better. I'm going to get you jobs. I'm going to get you money. I'm going to get you all sorts of stuff. That's what I'm going to get. I'm going to give you all this stuff. You don't have the power to give it. You don't have the power to take it away. You don't have the power to mandate. You don't have the power in any way, shape, or form to do anything but administer one branch of the government. You administer the executive branch of government. And the executive branch of government is permitted to do only what Congress and the Senate allows it to do under the force of law. Now, you can issue all the executive orders you want. You can go executive order yourself all day, every day, and on video. All you can do is order the people inside your branch of government to do what you tell them to do. That's it. You can tell them to wear a mask. You can tell them to get a COVID test. You can tell them that they got to wear blue shirts. You can tell them all that stuff. But ordinary people, not in the employ of the federal government, nor dependent as a contractor on the federal government, you have nothing to say to me, to the governor of North Carolina, the governor of South Carolina. You got nothing. You're not going to call out the National Guard. You're not going to deploy the army. You're not going to do martial law. You're not going to do any of that. You're going to administer your branch of government, Mr. President, because that's what you do. And you do it very poorly, incredibly poorly. But you have to understand, folks, the people that botched Afghanistan, the people that can't get a handle on COVID, the people that tore the southern border open, and now we got upwards of 1 to 2 million people who have crossed into the country. Those people are going to tell you how you have to live your life. As we speak, they're putting the steel fencing back up at the Capitol because there's some protest is going to be happening on the 18th of September. People who are concerned about the denial of civil rights and liberties to the people who are still sitting in jails and not having been in front of a judge yet as a result of the January 6th riot. The new distraction, the new fear, the new panic is that come September the 18th, they're going to do something really bad. So Nancy Pelosi has ordered the rebuilding of the fencing, the steel fencing, the razor wire, all that sort of stuff around the Capitol. And understand why that is. That's because you are not to have access to the so-called People's House. You are not to have access to your elected representatives. You are not to have access to the senators. You are not to have access to the government in Washington, D.C., except on the terms decided by those who have voted to keep you out. Whose country? Our country. Who's in charge? We the people. It's right there.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
On a document. Good to have you here, Brett Jensen. How are you?
Just fine, sir. Thank you.
What the heck is going on at CMS? You know, you've been kind of documenting the problems with firearms showing up in the schools over the last couple of weeks. What is happening? What are we understanding, especially in the wake of this atrocity that took place just a couple of nights ago in Northwest Charlotte, the death of a 3-year-old boy in his own bed? because 150 rounds were fired in. What's happening at CMS?
So we know about the five guns that were found in the first 5 days of school with CMS at high schools. And we know about a knife that was found as well during the first 5 days. Mm-hmm. And we know about the shooting that you just mentioned, the tragic shooting that you just mentioned, that has high school ties to it, various high schools tied to that as well. Mm-hmm. And so there were a lot of threats going out on social media saying that particular high schools were basically going to get shot up. And West Mech, North Mech, we had Hopewell, and the brand new high school that used to be Vance High School, but now it's the, you know, they changed the name.
Yep.
And so, so anyway, there were a lot of threats at these schools. And so what they did was CMS said, okay, we're going to go into a basically a modified lockdown. So it's not a full lockdown. It's a modified lockdown where the outer perimeter and all the doors are still locked. You know, and you know, students have to be in their classrooms and all that, and so it also meant an extra police presence at these four high schools, and so, so that was what's going on, and so there was a lot of people were telling me, hey, I'm hearing, or you know, I've been told, or my son or my daughter say that like the classes are half empty there, that the school, like 50% of these schools weren't even showing up for fear of gun violence. And I asked CMS about that, and they said, while there is a decrease in attendance, they didn't think it was at or below 50% of attendance. They just thought it was like maybe a minor decrease in attendance. You know, either way, you know, it's a tough situation if you're a parent. What do you do? And so, because again, there's no such thing as virtual learning anymore.
Right.
You can't learn on your laptop or your tablet. So if you're out, you're just out.
Right.
You know, like in the old days. Mm-hmm. And so, so that was a big thing. And so then also tonight.
Yeah, this is important. This is big.
Yeah, these, you know, because these schools are involved, you know, with high school football. And a lot of them have really, really good football teams. And I can tell you that I asked CMS, and they said there will be an extra presence of law enforcement at games involving these four specific high schools.
All right, now see, this is really troubling, because you can control a school during the daytime, obviously, right? You can control who goes in, who goes out. You can have school resource officers there. But when you get to a football game on a Friday night, we know how chaotic that can be under ideal circumstances when there is no threat, right? We know what that looks like. What about this? Are we seeing a lot of Are we going to get CMPD show rolling strong? I mean, what are we going to see here at these schools?
You know, that's a great question, and my guess, and again, this is purely a guess, but mm-hmm. it's a reasonable guess, is that you're going to have, like you said, you know, a lot of law enforcement there, but you're also going to have, you know, like for gunpowder sniffing dogs, you know, because mm-hmm. they're going to make mm-hmm. everyone go in and out in one area. You're not going to have all these different entrances and exits and everything else. It's just going to basically, everyone's going to have to funnel through the same area. That's the way they usually do it, you know, on situations like this. Mm-hmm. And so I would think that would be the case. And you're going to have a lot of police there, and making sure that everything is copacetic and not everything is, you know, that there isn't any trouble. So I would think that there might be, you know, dogs, some of these dogs at these places, just to make sure that, you know, the gunpowder's not there.
All right. Stay with me, Brett Jensen. I want to pick this call up because this is on what we're talking about. I want to see if you know anything about this. Mike, welcome to the show. Oh, he hung up. He said, this guy Mike, he just called in, and he said that there's a percentage of staff who are not showing up as well at the schools. Do you have any reports on that?
Well, I don't know about those specific schools, but I can tell you that staff all over the district mm-hmm. is way low in terms of how many teachers they have. I know for a fact mm-hmm. one substitute teacher at a school down in the Ballantyne area was told, hey, if you want to just work the rest of the year, just you're good. Just let us know.
Wow.
You can have this class for the rest of the year.
It's a big deal.
And because they're so short of substitutes at all these schools, and because they're short of teachers. And so, I mean, they literally offered her. And again, this isn't a woman who, you know, necessarily has her teaching degree or anything like that. But they said, hey, we need bodies. And would you be interested in teaching the rest of the year?
Wow. That's a huge reveal right there. Brett Jensen. All right, we're going to let you go so you can run down a lot more other stories, and as they develop, we'll certainly check back in with you. I appreciate you making time for us on this busy, busy Friday, my friend.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
News Talk 1110-993-WBT, Brett Winterbull Show, and it is the day before the day that changed everything. Tomorrow, the 20th anniversary, commemorating the horrible day of September the 11th, 2001, and I want to welcome back to the program Robin Walensky, who is joining us. Robin, you are in Atlanta right now, but you are somebody who was there at Ground Zero at the Twin Towers back 20 years ago tomorrow. It's good to have you back, and tell us a little bit about your remembrance of that day.
Well, it is hard to get my mind around it, if I'm being honest. You know, 20 years ago, there are parts of it, you know, looking up at the Twin Towers, both buildings on fire, seeing things coming out, all the paper, like confetti, and then there were these loud thumps, and, you know, the human eye could only see so far, and I thought it was, you know, furniture going out the window, like desks, but it was really people. And that image just doesn't leave you. The smell of death that was in the air for that day and months later as the fires burned. The smell of smoke, I mean, the level of PTSD that I have and many others have is, you know, unsurpassed. It was literally like being in a war. I will share with you that while I work in Atlanta right now as we speak, I'm sitting in front of the Flight 93 National Memorial. And I'm about to go and see the memorial. I have been here to Shanksville before. I was here on the 9-year anniversary when Michelle Obama and Laura Bush was here. But there was no memorial here. It was just the crash scene at the time, along with just a bell. And now there is a fitting memorial, you know, as you would see in Washington, D.C. or somewhere else in the United States. But it's a really hard day. I'm moved by the fact always when I come to Shanksville how barren it is here, that clearly when these 40 patriots led by Todd Beamer, who said, let's roll,
right,
and they came together, you know, no Democrats, no Republicans, you're not black, you're not white, you're not old, you're not young, you're an American. Mm-hmm. And they came together to tackle the terrorists on that flight. And they came together, and it was a beautiful thing. They knew that their lives were going to end, but they did the American thing, and they fought back.
They did, and that's such an important point, because that's the spirit of America, to defend the innocent and to protect our fellow Americans. And yet, this is such a bitter. This is such a bitter anniversary, not just for the underlying events of September the 11th, but to look at all that was lost with the cut and run out of Afghanistan, the way the administration did it. And I don't want to put you in a partisan spot here, but certainly that's also hanging in the air on this day.
Oh, that, by hands down, that is the elephant in the room that people don't want to talk about. But you know what? We have to talk about it, because radical Islamic terrorists, as you know and your audience knows, they play the long game. They're not into the Twitterverse, right?
Right.
They, Osama bin Laden, 8 years in a cave, plotted and planned 9/11 while we were asleep at the wheel as a country. And as someone myself, who I reported in 1993 on the World Trade Center bombing,
right,
it was the same group, radical Islamic terrorists, Al-Qaeda, Muslim Brotherhood, ISIS, ISIS-K. They're a bunch of wannabes, right?
Right.
They're all the same people. They hate us. We're the infidel. They're jihadists, and they wanted to take the towers down. And they want Sharia law here in America, and that's really the bottom line. And so the elephant in the room is exactly that if we are asleep at the wheel again, they're not asleep at the wheel.
One of the enduring tragedies of that day, and it continues to this very day, is the large number of people who have lost their lives due to cancers and illnesses as a result of either having been down at Ground Zero during the attack, in the immediate aftermath of the attack, and even up to and including first responders from around the country and around the world who came to the United States and to New York City specifically to aid in the recovery efforts. We have lost thousands and thousands and thousands of people. This isn't just about the 3,000 that we horribly lost on that day. This is about the tens of thousands that have also perished in the last 20 years.
Absolutely. I would include myself in that, I remember, first of all, my destination on 9/11 originally was the New York Stock Exchange. And a week later, Rudy Giuliani, along with the head of the NYSE, Dick Grasso, wanted to get it open as a symbol for America because the Dow had dropped like over 800 points. And they wanted to get it open. And I was there for that ringing of the bell. And I was reminded by it today. I saw Maria Bartiromo on TV, and she was there as well. And I was there for Associated Press at the time. And let me tell you, I could not, in the building, in the New York Stock Exchange, which is two blocks away from where the Twin Towers once stood tall, I could not see my hand in front of my face. And the air that I breathed that day, it's so troubling. And I get chest x-rays all the time, and I get tested all the time for my breathing and my health. A very close friend of my husband and myself, retired New York City police officer Billy Kelly, he got skin cancer on his head. He was one of the, from the forensics unit, he was at the Staten Island landfill in New York where they took all the debris. And it was his job to go through all that rubble and all that debris. And what was his job? To look for human remains, bones, body parts, anything that belonged to a human. And now he got skin cancer. It spread to his pancreas and liver. And sadly, he's in hospice today as we speak. And we think of the Billy Kellys of 9/11, people that did everything they could to give the living closure for their deceased loved one. And now he himself is passing away. It is beyond belief sad. We have lost more people to the 9/11 toxins than we had on the terrorist from the terrorist attack on that day 20 years ago.
Absolutely heartbreaking. Robin Walensky, it's terrific to have you here, though, under the circumstances that neither of us would ever want to see precipitate that. We appreciate you being there at Shanksville, and please include the people of Charlotte and the good thoughts there as you make your way to that site, remembering what happened on that terrible day 20 years ago.
Absolutely. And happy to check in with you again next week, because we are going to have here President Biden will be here tomorrow. Kamala Harris, the vice president, and former President George Bush is scheduled to be here in Shanksville. It should be a fascinating dynamic.
It should be. Thanks so much. Safe travels, my friend, and we'll talk again soon.
You too. God bless.
All the best. You as well. That's Robin Walensky, 704-570-1110. News Talk.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at kisqali.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
1110-993 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. As I think about the commemoration of September the 11th coming up tomorrow, we have to remember it really wasn't the start of the war on terror. If you want to be technical about it, that would have occurred, of course, on November the 4th, 1979, when the Iranian regime, the Ayatollah Khomeini, sent in his minions to take over the American embassy and hold those folks hostage, 52 hostages for 444 days. I would go back and count that as probably the start of the modern global war on terror, because the Iranians have killed a lot of Americans. In fact, up until September the 11th, the Iranian had killed the most Americans. and Iranian-sponsored organizations had killed the most Americans in this war on terror. Whether it was people who were abducted in Beirut during the 1980s, the TWA 847 hijacking, the murder of Navy diver Robert Steedham, the bombing of the barracks for the United States Marine Corps, the peacekeepers in Lebanon. The Iranians have a lot of American blood on their hands, and it's not lost on me that the administration that soft-soaped the mullahs in Iran with pallets of cash just went very soft on the Taliban. Something to kind of think about as we rethink this war on terror. There was a piece just a couple of days ago. I'm going to go back on the phones in a second. But there was a piece just a couple of days ago in Politico that says, President Biden intends to use tomorrow's anniversary as a reset to basically close the lid on the active war on terror out there and to move to other pressing concerns like health, security, and cyber. To be continued. John, welcome to the program. What's on your mind? Hello, John. John going once, John going twice. Okay, John, we lost you. On September the 11th, I was actually in New York City. My wife and I were in New York City. My wife was a student at Pace University across the way from the Twin Towers. And I was working for Rush at the time. I was actually in the offices there at 2 Penn Plaza above Madison Square Garden. And Rush was off that day. We were going to have a guest host on that day. It was actually going to be the late Tony Snow was our guest host on that day. And the first tower was struck. The second tower was struck. And over the course of the next hours, we watched and you could see the smoke billowing out over southern Manhattan, out over the water. And we just waited and prayed and hoped to God that that people were going to be able to get out of those buildings. And when those towers came down, my wife was right down there. We had, many people remember these, the old Nextel Direct Connect phones. And you couldn't get a signal. You couldn't get anything in terms of communicating. But every, 50th or 100th try on the Nextel Direct Connect, you could chirp. You could chirp back and forth. And it was a terrible, horrible day. And listening to Robin Walensky talk about what it is that happened, the smell is what sticks with me the most. The smell of the burning that was present, you could smell it all over the city, was the thing. And that pile burned for 17, 18 months. It was still smoldering. And it was an incredibly devastating day. And we had just gotten married the year before, and my wife was there in southern Manhattan on that day, and I just was able to get in touch with her across the Nextel Direct Connect, and I just told her, you see the Empire State Building? Just start walking towards the Empire State Building, because it was very difficult to coordinate with people. In fact, my mother was supposed to be in the South Tower, because the law firm she was working with at that time was relocating into the South Tower, but they had canceled due to an illness. They had canceled the orientation that day, and so luckily she was in Midtown Manhattan. But I recall it very, very well, vividly, and I find myself to this very day, seething with the anger that every American felt. It was a violation of such a magnitude. It was just the sort of thing that you would never expect to see happen on American soil. And one of the lasting memories I have, not from New York, but from Washington, D.C., was being called by John McCaslin, who at that time was working with the Washington Times and had also been a fill-in host on the Rush Limbaugh show in that roster of people back then. And he had called to say that he had just seen the Pentagon hit. He was on the road, on the beltway, out adjacent to the Pentagon, and had seen the Pentagon get hit by an aircraft. And he was giving me sort of a play-by-play report, and we were plugging him into WABC local radio at that point. And Tony Snow was doing his best. He was at Fox, and he was also a radio host, and he was doing his best to get to the ABC studios so that he could fill in for Rush on that day. Ultimately, that didn't take place. We had to route everything to the West Coast, and Bill Handel from KFI would end up filling that gap and filling the airwaves on that day. It's a remarkably sad, sad day, and it's one that I think we all ought to think and pray about, that it never happens again on American soil or anyplace else. I'm Brett Winterbull. Another great hour straight ahead. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WB.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. Hour number two underway. Our phone number, 704-570-1110. And I want to invite you to share your thoughts, especially your thoughts of September 11th. Especially thankful for the men and women who have served us so honorably and well. And some, unfortunately, have had to make the ultimate sacrifice in fighting radical Islamic terrorism in Afghanistan and Iraq and in other places around the world. I do remember that September 20th speech given by George W. Bush, in which he warned the American people. He said, listen, there will be battles that you know about, and there will be engagements that you know nothing about, that you never hear about because of the nature of the warriors that have to fight these sorts of fights in different places around the world. And it stuck with me. I have to say, in all seriousness, that September 20 speech is like top five greatest speeches given by an American president, I think. I think it was absolutely the right tone at the right time. And don't forget, up until what happened on September the 11th, 2001, there were people who were saying George Bush was not the legitimate president of the United States. We were incredibly divided. Al Gore was running around on TV saying that he used to be the next president of the United States. All that stuff went out the window, at least for a few weeks. Then you ended up with the narrative coming from the hateful left, referring to George W. Bush as either having made the attack happen on purpose or let the attack happen on purpose. And Hillary Clinton was one of the purveyors of that blood libel. She stood on the floor of the Senate with a copy of the New York Post and asked, what did Bush know about this attack? And It was a shocking thing to see that person who had spent very little time in New York, but for running for Moynihan's seat after he passed away, showing up and becoming a senator from the state of New York. And she was not a popular senator from the state of New York among New Yorkers. So we know that tomorrow is the 20th anniversary of the start of the war on terror as we know it today. But you have to understand something, and this is vitally important. There is a war on you. There's a war on you, the strivers. I've warned about the strivers being targeted for a very, very long time. The strivers are the people that run the small businesses. Sometimes they're family businesses. Sometimes they're businesses with 20 or 30 people or 10 people or 50 people. The strivers are the people that pay themselves last, that do what they can do to keep their employees working and paid even in tough times. Those are the strivers. Those are the strivers. And the strivers are about to be targeted in a very serious and real way. Joe Biden wants to raise your taxes to an unbelievable degree. He wants to come after everybody to pay for this $3.5 trillion monstrosity that he calls human infrastructure. And so for a good part of this hour, I want to dive into this. It's an important issue that I don't want to be overlooked or ignored or blown off or any of that sort of stuff. TJ, I want to use Cut 32 Newsmax. There's a package that they put together when Biden was in New York in the last couple of days and was getting heckled by people. He was bragging, talking loudly about this plan that he had for tax hikes because he wants to transform the American economy. Cut number 32. This is the package that ran on Newsmax. Go.
My Build Back Better plan with key investments in to fight climate change, cutting emissions and make things more resilient. Each dollar we invest, every dollar we raise, a city block by 2 feet, floodproof power stations.
But the president's plan would increase the capital gains tax from 21% to 28% with a top marginal rate of 39.6% for Americans earning over $1 million. It's unclear if those numbers are for individuals or households. And unsold assets at the time of an owner's death would be subject to a capital gains tax as high as 43.4% for millionaires. That's on top of their 40% estate tax. And those numbers are prorated for lower-earning Americans. And there's a per-mile user fee program in the bipartisan infrastructure bill, with early estimates saying it would be about 8 cents per mile, with the amount varying from passenger cars to heavy trucks. And all of this will help fund the Democrats' agenda.
We so urgently need, Mr. President, your big and bold Build Back Better plan. We must attack the cancer of climate change that is driving these destructive storms.
And as I said, I'm working in Congress to pass two important pieces of legislation that this man here is honchoing through the
honchoing.
Congress for me.
Honcho.
Bipartisan plan.
And Democrats are forging ahead, but they're facing a bit of an uphill battle when it comes to two senators, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, who have signaled that they're opposed to a $3.5 trillion price tag on the budget resolution. And the House Ways and Means Committee will start debate on that budget resolution later this week.
Okay, this is an important thing to note. You heard they're going to implement about 8 cents a mile tax on the miles you drive. Okay, so you understand that the already difficult job of being an interstate trucker, if you're an independent, you're going to have to foot that bill. If you're somebody that drives for work, you're a salesperson, or you're a consultant, or you have clients that you have to visit, or travel for work, you're going to foot that bill. People are going to start to live in a defensive way. This is frightening. They're going to run their businesses in a defensive way. And what this is going to do is this is going to breed less opportunity and slower growth. Money will go where it's respected. There's a reason why all these corporations prior to the Trump administration were fleeing over to Ireland and Europe and all these places. Well, we fixed that, didn't we? Janet Yellen, the Secretary of the Treasury, and Joe Biden went around the world and struck deals, making sure that no other country would create a more favorable tax environment for corporations and for wealth. What they did was they colluded with socialist countries in Europe and tyrannies around the globe to make sure that money wouldn't be able to flee from the United States without being punished. See, the strivers are this incredibly important group of people. You, the strivers, who get up and go to work very early in the day and get to bed very late at night, all while still having to manage your personal responsibilities. In the minds of a guy like Joe Biden, you're rich. You're very rich. You make over $100,000 a year. You've got to be targeted. In fact, you know what you are? As Amity Schles talked about in her book, you are the forgotten man or woman. You are the people who get soaked, ripped off, and reamed by schemes written up by people who have no business writing tax policy or energy policy or even foreign policy. The same people who just screwed up Afghanistan and can't handle COVID, who think you are the problem, are the people who are looking to ruin this economy. Right now, you're being hit by a very quiet, very secret 8% tax that is regressive.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
It is the Brent Winterbull Show, News Talk 1110-993 WBT. I'm going to go to the phones here in just one second, but I want to pay off what it was that I said as I went to the break. What have I told you? That you're being hit with an 8% tax right now, and the tax is regressive. You know what it is? It's called inflation. Look at your grocery bills. Look at your gas bills. Look at your utilities. Do you know that economists polled by Reuters is forecasting that year over year, the inflation that's out there in the market, groceries, gas, energy, you name it, 8.3%. 8.3%. 8.3%. That is a tax on what it is that you are earning. They're taking 8.2% off the top. And who's doing it? The government is. Only the government can do this. And they don't have to vote it into effect. They just have to pump money out. What is inflation? It is too many dollars chasing too few goods. You have an administration that is paying people not to go to work. You have labor shortages everywhere you can see. And now you've got this inflation. Who ever heard about inflation since like the late 70s? Was never an issue. High inflation, supply constraints, that's tanking motor vehicle sales in August. Prompted economists to slash their third quarter gross domestic product growth estimates to as low as 3.5% annualized. This looks just like the Obama-Biden economy. The economy, just by comparison, grew at a rate of 6.6% in the second quarter. And here is the dirty little secret that you can carry around with you when it comes to inflation. The danger with inflation is once prices go up, they don't go back down. The economy, producers, consumers all have to live in a costlier world where many don't have the means to do more than just barely survive. That's Chris Rupke, who's a chief economist at Forward Bonds in New York. This is being done directly by the federal government and one branch of government. The strivers are the ones who suffer the most with this. John, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Brett, this is your Uncle Joe. Your Uncle Joe Biden. I don't take many questions, but just give me a few moments. I've been trying to call you for 36 hours, but I ended up having to call your mom to get your number. The taxes, you're telling all those people in Charlotte. I told you, I campaigned. I wasn't going to raise taxes. Mm-hmm. So that $1,000 that I'm going to take for traveling around in your car, mm-hmm. that's not a tax. You guys don't make enough money to pay taxes down there in Charlotte. And that inflation, now I'm going to take out the price of the meat and chicken and fish. Then it's not inflation anymore.
And gasoline and tires and electricity, yes.
Brett, work with your Uncle Joe here.
I know. I'm trying, man. A nice try. It was good. It was good. It was funny while it lasted. Dean, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, you know, I was just listening to you talk about inflation, mm-hmm. and I think a lot of people have the misconception that inflation is just a separate entity out there. That, you know, as you explained it, it is really a function of companies absorbing costs.
Right.
So inflation is a direct result of all these issues you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But anyways, I wanted to say you said that the demotivating of the wealth builders,
yes,
is what these taxes are going to do.
That is.
And then we're demoralizing all the poor people from taking jobs.
That's right.
By paying them more not to work.
That's right.
So where is the common ground? How do we correct this?
There is no common.
We don't want to go back to Trump where we eat each other, do we, or anything like that? Or
eat each other? What do you mean eat each other? What does that mean?
Well, you know, I mean that it's survival of the fittest kind of thing.
Well, no. Look, an economy is not the survival of the fittest. An economy is just supply and demand. If there's more demand for something, right, the price will go up. If there's less demand for something, the price will go down. The economy, the free market, is not moral or immoral. It just exists. That's all it is. That's all it is. And so people weren't eating each other. You had unemployment rate that was plummeting. People were working, and it was across the spectrum, different races, different backgrounds. People were making money. And what happened? Xi Jinping and the Wuhan flu came in and demolished economies in the West, demolished it. You know, listen to what the president's been saying. It's important to understand this. The president took a nastier tone with you and me last night than he ever did with the Taliban or Xi Jinping or the mullahs in Iran. We're the problem. We're the problem. Brandon, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for calling.
Wanted to comment about his 8% tax on driving.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, he can shove it up his caboose.
There you go. That was creative. I didn't think he was going to go there, but that was pretty good. Here's the deal. I mentioned the forgotten man. Who are you? You're the forgotten man and woman. The government man wants to help the downtrodden man. You're the forgotten man. You pay for all the fixes. Ask yourself this question. When you look at these policies that are being unveiled, why do tax cuts sunset but tax increases don't sunset? Why is that the case? So what you're told is federal policy should be that tax cuts can only last 10 years, but tax increases are forever. These are liars and cheats in Washington, D.C., and both parties have them. They are stealing money and food from the mouths of your children, and they have the nerve to look at you and say you are greedy, you are stingy, you are evil. You fund all of this. And in fact, in a matter of minutes, I'm going to share with you a little bit of information on a poll that's just come out that indicates it's not us versus them. It's us, the Strivers, the Americans, against them in D.C. News Talk.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
1110-993 WBT, as you've heard in that update, CRT is alive and well in North Carolina, courtesy of all those people who voted for Roy Cooper. Cooper himself says we're not going to depart from the regimen that has been demanded by the activist class. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But I just wanted to close the loop on this issue. 80% of the people in this country, according to a recent poll, do not want taxes raised coming off this pandemic. 80%. Do you know how hard it is to get 80% to agree to anything? By strong majorities, these are the following demographic groups that now say it is not time to raise taxes, Mr. President. 86% of women do not want taxes going up. 85% of voters making less than $75,000 do not want taxes to go up. 83% of independents do not want taxes to go up. 82% of suburban voters, 74% of Hispanic voters, 71% of urban voters, 70% of Biden voters don't want taxes being raised, and 69% of Democrats do not want taxes raised. So, of course, what's going to happen? They're going to push to raise the taxes. You know it, and I know it. But let me give you something that you don't yet know. Build back better, right? You always talk, build back better. I'm starting to refer to this in my private life when I'm talking to people about the Build Back Better plan. I'm stealing the title from The Who, and I'm referring to it as the Biden meaty, beady, big and bouncy. I mean, that's what I'm really, that's, I think that's what we call it, the meaty, beady, big and bouncy plan. So remember the mortgage meltdown in 2008? You guys remember that? Remember when the mortgages melted down in 2008? Do you remember why those mortgages melted down in 2008? It's a really easy explanation. The financial crisis of 2008, the worst financial crisis since the Great Depression, started with a crisis in the subprime mortgage market. Do you remember what happened? Banks were required by the government, the Fair Housing Act of 1968, the Community Reinvestment Act of 1977, the Equal Opportunity Credit Act of 1974, coupled with a whole bunch of other stuff. You had banks compelled to lend money to people who could not pay it back. Remember those ugly days? Under those laws, especially the CRA, the Community Reinvestment Act, that was all stuff pushed by Barney Frank. the CRA banks had a legal duty to make high-risk home loans to low-income borrowers. Even giant-sponsored enterprises, remember the old term, the GSEs, were forced by the Clinton administration to have at least 50% of their loan portfolios in subprime loans. That was risky. And what ended up happening? Well, every one of these idiotic laws and the idiotic demands that banks lend money to people who can't pay it back, every one of those laws is still on the books. The Center for Responsible Lending works to ensure a fair, inclusive financial marketplace that creates opportunities for all creditworthy borrowers, regardless of their income. So now it appears that the Biden administration is going to go back to the ugly old days of the Clinton years and force banks to lend money and mortgages to people who don't qualify based on income and assets. Doesn't stop there, though. Remember the student loan crisis? Remember millions of individual Americans wasting 4+ years and hundreds of thousands of dollars getting a leftist claptrap degree from a leftist claptrap factory? Now they're having difficulty paying the loans back because they learn nothing of actual value to themselves or society. Well, that CRL wants to cancel student loan debt. Government illegally froze interest on these loans and illegally made loan payments voluntary. And the borrowers have been making payments so small that they didn't even cover the interest when they were actually being charged interest. And the aforementioned harmonic convergence of these leftist organizations pressuring the Biden administration is a part of the amalgam demanding that we, quote, cancel the debt. It means telling the lenders, who will then be out $1.6 trillion, to just drop debt. That will hurt the economy. So you have the ripe makings, and this is a piece by Seton Motley over at Red State. He's going to join me on Monday to go into the details on this, but I want to put this on your radar screen because all of this stuff is what's in that $3.5 trillion monstrosity that nobody's paying attention to because Biden's screaming at everybody about the vaccine. They're busily trying to move away from September the 11th. All of that stuff. I'm not going to let them use the fog of war, both economic war and global war. I'm not going to let them push this stuff through without you knowing what's in these bills. So add it up. 8% tax on everybody due to the Bidenflation. 8% tax on every mile you drive with your vehicle. You've got a hike in income taxes coming, wealth taxes, death taxes, all of that's coming. And now they're going to go back to the bad old days of the 2000s and forcibly demand that institutions lend money to people who cannot pay it back. Am I the only guy that remembers the stated income rules where you could go into a mortgage place and you can say, hey, I want a $4 million mortgage for this house because I have enough money to pay for it. Now, I can't give you any of my assets. I can't give you any kind of a report. I can't do any of that. Just give me the money so I can get the house. It cratered the housing market, and it gave you the original Obama-Biden administration, and they're looking to go back to those terrible policies. Do we ever learn? No, is the answer. 704-570-1110. Up next, Father Bill Nicholas is going to come by. What about these religious leaders saying that Catholic politicians should be denied communion and maybe even excommunicated? Well, Brett Witter bullshit.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Happy to welcome back to the program somebody who I'm very good friends with, Father Bill Nicholas out of the Archdiocese of San Francisco. A very good afternoon to you, Father. It's good to have you back on the program.
Thanks, Brett. Good to be with you again.
So I saw this Washington Post op-ed, Our Duty to Challenge Catholic Politicians Who Support Abortion Rights. It was penned by Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione there in San Francisco. And it's certainly raised some hackles among Some Catholic politicians, including obviously the president of the United States, Joseph Biden, in the reaction that that you know probably was not expected by a lot of folks. How is this unfolding? How is this playing, especially relative to the Texas law and the renewed interest from the Attorney General?
Well, I wouldn't agree that the reaction was unexpected because it's no really real big surprise that Catholics who would be in favor of abortion or proverbially pro-choice mm-hmm. would object to what the Archbishop had to say. You wouldn't expect people to disagree with you to take it well when you have an op-ed such as this. And interestingly enough, the example he gives of a past precedent of prominent Catholics being excommunicated because they were on the wrong side of a social issue is relatively recent at the time when segregation, mm-hmm. the racism of segregation, was a prominent issue. And along with his op-ed in the Washington Post is a picture of two black nuns walking on the sidewalk and a woman with her back to the camera mm-hmm. holding a sign protesting the excommunication for a political reason. So even in that particular case, which Archbishop Cordiglione used as an example,
right.
was met with opposition from, you guessed it, pro-segregation, racist Catholics. And the Archbishop at the time of New Orleans, Archbishop Joseph Rummel, was very active in bringing about an end to segregation in his diocese. And it was met with, you guessed it, protests from those who didn't like it. So the reaction of Speaker Pelosi and the president isn't really that surprising, but we'll see how it plays out in the future.
What of this notion that people say, well, that's my yes, that is my religion. I am a faithful Catholic, but I believe in ... Right. That my personal beliefs are different than my political beliefs. How do we untwine that?
Well, there's a meme going around the internet these days in which Archbishop Fulton Sheen, who was very popular on television in the 50s and 60s, at least he's credited with saying, anyone who says, I am Catholic, but, is really saying, I'm not Catholic. Anything before the word but is reduced to nonsense because of the word but. And I often refer to them in my homilies and my preaching as yes, but Catholics.
Uh-huh.
They're not Catholics. It's, I'm a yes, but. Yes, I'm Catholic, but. And then they throw in what either they disagree with or they object to. But what Archbishop Cordiglione is emphasizing in his letter is we are not yes, but Catholics. We must stand for Christian values, even in society. This is what the founding fathers wanted when they allowed for freedom of religion, not a state religion. But they wanted religious people who had moral principles to be the leaders of our country and the people who lived in this country so that it was a kind of a moral foundation upon which this country is built. And, yeah, we were not founded perfectly on that, like the principles of liberty, which is why eventually slavery was something that had to be abolished and we were able to abolish it. Segregation was done away with, mm-hmm. as we know from his op-ed. And in no small part because of the leadership of some of the bishops at that time, not the least of which was the Archbishop of New Orleans. And abortion is the civil rights issue of our day in which we are imperfectly living the principles in which everyone has a right to life. That's in our Declaration of Independence, but obviously we are not living that perfectly today. And it's another hurdle that our nation has to overcome so that we can more fully and more perfectly live those principles on which our nation was founded. And just as in the case of the anti-segregationist movement, mm-hmm. even the abolitionist movement, the pro-life movement is prominently a religious movement based in Christianity. Deeply religious Christian people who hold those principles of the sanctity of life are trying to push for an end to this grave social injustice. And we're lucky that bishops like the Archbishop of New Orleans back in the 50s and 60s, mm-hmm. and currently Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione here in San Francisco, are willing and able to step up and remind people who are Catholics and all Christians, really, of what our faith professes and what prominent Catholics in public life have a responsibility to.
Father Bill Nicholas joining us from the Archdiocese of San Francisco. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this in the last 2 minutes of our conversation here. We have a recall underway there in the state of California. Religious liberty and freedom was at issue during the lockdowns. We know that the Archbishop and the Catholic Church were very active in trying to preserve those the right to worship in the way that the faith instructs people to. What about that? Is that playing a role in the discussion regarding this recall attempt at Gavin Newsom?
Oh, definitely, it's playing a role. Many people who are faithful in practicing their faith, and especially the Catholic faith, in which we need to be present to worship and receive the Eucharist, a physical presence that we receive, certainly haven't forgotten the reluctance and the delay in which the state and the cities had in reopening the churches. We're remembering the freedom of speech and religion issues, mm-hmm. and also in the last few days, the question of the race of one of the opponents, Larry Elder. Yeah. We remember how things played out when President Obama was a candidate and the opinion of people who didn't support Obama. But we're seeing now some people's behavior with regard to one of the opposition candidates, Larry Elder, certainly is disturbing. But we'll have to see how it plays out. It'll be this Tuesday, and a lot of people are holding their breath. Others are. We have lots of very passionate people on both sides, and we'll see how things turn out.
And the president's on his way out to California on Monday to campaign for Governor Newsom. Perhaps he'll stop by in the Archdiocese in San Francisco.
Who knows?
You never know. You never know. Father Bill Nicholas, wonderful to catch up with you on the program. I so appreciate you making time for us today, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Good to be with you again, Brett. Thanks a million.
Absolutely. Happy to do it. I'm Brett Winterbull, News Talk 1110-993 WBT.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
News Talk 1110-993 WBT. All right, be honest with me, folks, and I know you will be honest with me. Be honest with me. What did you think of the tone the president set last night when he spoke about why it is you people need to get the vaccine? I mean, it was that close. It was a kissing cousin to you people. Okay, you people. Let me give you a couple of examples. And you're not going to believe this, but I promise you it's true. Tony Fauci says Biden's going too easy on the people in America. That Biden needs to be harsher. More. What would you call that, Fauci?
Well, I would say he needs to be more like Xi Jinping.
Let's listen here. Here's the president last night talking about Cut 33, about getting these governors out of the way. Go.
And all school officials trying to do the right thing by our children, I'll always be on your side. Let me be blunt. My plan also takes on elected officials in states that are undermining you in these life-saving actions. Right now, local school officials are trying to keep children safe in a pandemic while their governor picks a fight with them and even threatens their salaries or their jobs. Talk about bullying in schools. If they'll not help, if these governors won't help us beat the pandemic, I'll use my power as president to get them out of the way.
What does that mean? Like, that's a threat. That is an absolute... It's interesting, right? Because his attorney general is right now working to not protect the unborn, right? He his default position is to protect the born, obviously, not to protect the elderly, not to protect the unborn, because these Democrat governors, you know, the Democrat governors around the country, Cuomo before he got thrown out on his ear, and Newsom, who will likely be thrown out on his ear, they're not standing up for innocent life. They're just not interested. It's incredible. Sanjay Gupta was talking to Tony Fauci. This is Cut 34. And Tony Fauci says Biden's going too easy on the American people. Go.
You know, when it comes to the mandates for through the Department of Labor and companies that have 100 or more employees. My understanding of what the president was saying, Dr. Fauci, was that either you get a vaccine or you have to be tested regularly. And oftentimes it seems like these two things are commingled, like do one or the other. But in one case, you're preventing it. In the other case, you're diagnosing it. Why not just do the vaccine mandate and not say that the testing can be sort of this off-ramp?
Well, I think the president is you know, being somewhat moderate in his demand, if you want to call it that, and that there are some people who really don't want to get vaccinated, but they don't want to lose their job. You got to give them an off lane. And the off lane is if you get tested frequently enough and find out you're positive, you won't come to work and you won't infect other people. So it really is somewhat of a compromise there. Myself, I would make it just vaccinate or not. But he was trying to be moderate in what his pronouncement was.
Okay. Colorectal cancer kills 52,000 people a year in America. Okay, so let's say that they come up with a vaccine for colorectal cancer. And there are people who want to take it and there are people who don't want to take it. And what if the alternative, the president of the United States says, well, then you know what you have to do? You have to get a colonoscopy every month. Every month. And we have to see if you're positive or negative for colon cancer. Now, you're sitting there and you're saying, wait, that's stupid, Brett. That would never happen. Well, he's using a test, a COVID test, as a punitive weapon against people in our country. What's to stop him from forcibly checking your blood sugar, from forcibly checking your rear end, from any of these sorts of things? I mean, if you can use a COVID, a COVID test as a punitive approach to make people comply with your order, then you could do any other test. You could. What's to stop him? What's to stop him from doing any other medical test on you so that you can go to work? And some of the language coming out of these people who allegedly are involved in the health professions are shocking. Cut 39. Dr. Lena Wen, once upon a time, she ran Planned Parenthood. She is now a CNN contributor, and she says, no, we got to go hammer down on you people that won't take the vaccine. Cut 39.
I absolutely think we should have that requirement. I think it was a major oversight on the part of the Biden administration to not issue this yesterday. And we have to talk about the reason. The reason isn't so much that we need to keep our train travel and plane travel even safer. They are pretty safe, although I definitely think that having a vaccine requirement would make it even safer and probably encourage many people who are vaccinated or who have young kids and want to protect them. Maybe it'll help to encourage those people to start traveling again. But there's an even bigger reason too, which is I think we really need to make it clear that there are privileges associated with being an American, that if you wish to have these privileges, you need to get vaccinated. Travel and having the right to travel interstate, it's not a constitutional right as far as I know to board a plane. And so saying that if you want to stay unvaccinated, that's your choice, but if you want to travel, you better go get that vaccine.
Okay, so you don't have a right to free travel in the country. You don't have a right to go wherever you want to go. Here comes a real cretin, by the way. Steve Schmidt, he's with the Lincoln Project. He looked the other way when John Weaver was harassing male staffers at the Lincoln Project. But Steve Schmidt says, oh, no, we're going to limit how you can travel. And in Steve Schmidt's world, he would make certain that airlines were punished if they didn't ban you from travel.
And so here's the deal as we move into the second year or third year. Someone's going to lose out. Someone's going to have to stay home. And let it be the people who would rather take horse dewormer than a safe, viable, effective vaccine that's saving lives. Someone's world is going to get smaller. I don't want it to be mine, and I don't want it to be my kids. So you have a lot of rights in America. I am completely opposed to the government mandating that you must, in the private sector, as a private citizen, take a vaccine. But you don't have a right to fly on American Airlines or Delta Airlines. Congress should pass laws that make it easier to file class action lawsuits against companies that won't make the right decisions to protect their consumers.
So if you don't have the vaccine, You don't have a right to travel. You know, if you don't have the vaccine, we're not going to run this NICS check to see if you can buy a firearm. We're not going to let you register your vehicle. We're going to make your world a lot smaller. They had the nerve to say that Trump was an autocrat. Every one of these is an autocrat. What do you think about this? 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110-993.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
BBT. You know what that song means? It means it's bow time. Bo Thompson joining us here on the program as we cross the streams. A final time this week, Bo Thompson. Good to have you back.
What's going on?
Hey, you know, we got a lot of stuff going on here. I got to say something from this morning. You rocked my world with that horrible Metallica package that's for sale now. I mean, it's just, it's awful. It's like 72 versions of every song on the Black Album.
Is there any band that you would pay for that much excess?
No, probably not. I don't think so. I'm not a fan of covers.
I don't mean covers. I'm talking about
for all the other stuff that's in it.
$150 You know, every outtake that's ever been done.
No, because I don't need the outtakes. I mean, just give me the album, and I'm good to go. It's okay, but I get that there are super fans that want to hear every little nuance and twist and turn. But honestly, just give me the finished product.
You know, there is a Huey Lewis version of that, but it's three CDs long.
Did Huey Lewis covered a bunch of Metallica songs?
No.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
Thankfully not. Although there is a mashup of Huey Lewis and Metallica floating around out there.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's actually quite well done. But no, there's a three disc Huey Lewis. I don't even know if you can get it anymore. I think it's out of print. Of course, I have it. But my point being is that that thing was probably like $30 because, I mean, hey, it's catalog, not as... I don't think there are all these outtakes and such. They didn't save that stuff. But somebody with Metallica did, and basically what this ends up being, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, the producers that were... Basically, now we live in an age when anything anybody can find,
yes.
Whether it was you know a recorder that was on the other side of the room that was recording the doorbell sounds. Oh yeah, and it picked up a little bit of the album being produced. Now we're going to put that on an album.
Exactly.
You know, I agree with you. I think it's excess too. I just was curious.
Yeah.
Would there be any group that would compel you to be interested in paying that kind of money?
No, and in fact, I came across, there's an a cappella cover of Metallica doing Battery, and they use their voices to make the instrument sounds. So it's all like, dum, 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 dum. I mean, it's really weird. And TJ's probably going to find it. It's absolutely disturbing. Yeah, but it gets really disturbing like a minute and a half in. And it's like why are we doing this? Like, let's just enjoy the music and just live our lives. And all that good stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Now here's what I was talking about. Maybe TJ can find this. It's on YouTube. It's James Hetfield and the News. Hip to be the Sandman. It is. It is unbelievable.
Hip to be the Sandman.
I mean, we you laugh and I laugh. On paper, it sounds hilarious.
I love
but,
it,
man. It is. Whoever put this together, my hat. I tip my hat to them.
I love fake Elvis doing Whole Lotta Rosie by AC/DC. That's another good one
too. There you go.
Let's get serious for a quick moment here. Tomorrow is the anniversary, the commemoration, 20 years since September 11th. You did a tremendous job with your montages and your look back in 2001 and 2002. Bo, it's absolutely stellar audio. What is the one thing that sticks out in your mind on that day?
I have to say, and I said this on the air on my show today when I was reflecting personally, you know, I put that thing that you play, and we pull it out every year, and it's in large part because it's really the only thing that I know of that's been saved that has, you know, the WBT moments all together. If there's more audio out there right now, I don't have it. Maybe somebody recorded it, you know, as a listener, because I used to do that with things, mm-hmm. excuse me, that I have in my archive. Some of it I recorded when I was a kid. So it's not that something else is not floating out there, but that's all that I've been able to get together. And, you know, I do think it's an important thing for people to hear what WBT sounded like, because in Charlotte, you know, for contextual purposes, that's what was going on that day. But to answer your question, I've heard that montage, you know, probably 300 times.
Sure.
You know, I painstakingly put it together all those years, so I scrutinized over all of it. But every September 11th, when I play that thing, I kind of, when I'm on the air, I sit back, kind of close my eyes, and just listen to it and pretend I'm listening to it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And any one of those events that just thing after thing after thing after thing, any one of those would have been the story of the year on its own. And you think about how close in proximity and time those things all happened in one day, and really, you know, almost one half day. And just to think that that really happened, and it's not a scripted movie, and it's not a based on events. It was the real thing happening in real time over the air. We watched it, and I had that moment every year since where I just think to myself, this really happened.
Yeah, it's incredible, and it does transport you back. One of the things that I think about when looking back at that is, you know, we have an entire generation of people who have absolutely no memory of that, and I'm happy that they didn't have to live through that. But the absolute the helpless feeling you had, no matter where you were in the United States, because that was the sudden focus, and we were laid low pretty quick by some pretty old school tactics, knives on planes, and you know, you're talking about fundamentally transforming every aspect of our lives for the last 20 years based on that 2-hour window in time that transformed the entire world.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to Hancock about this today. You know, you think about it, the first plane hits, whatever you were doing, wherever you were, everybody remembers who was old enough to remember and was alive then. Yeah, the first plane hits, and it's sadness and a bit of shock, but,
yep.
You know, what a tragic event. I can't believe this accident has happened.
Right.
And then the second one hits the tower, and it certainly becomes an element of anger, and then all of a sudden concern, because at that moment you realize, as Al Gardner on our air said, I'll never forget the phrase, he said, a second plane has hit and it would appear purposeful.
Yep.
You get that in your head, and then immediately you start thinking, okay, who do I know in New York? Mm-hmm. And then where's it going to happen next?
Right, right. And
you put all those emotions together, and everybody, that's the thing about it, Brett, is everybody had those in a slightly different way, mm-hmm. depending on where you were, but we all had them that day.
Yeah, without a doubt. For me, the two things that stick out in my mind, back on that day, I was at WABC above Madison Square Garden when the attacks happened. My wife was right across the street from, essentially right across from the towers in South Manhattan. The two things I think about and just always will be present is the sound of a fighter plane screaming down the island of Manhattan to secure the area, right? Because they were coming down, because you had to put up planes. And the second thing will always, in my mind, be standing in the newsroom when the tower comes down that had the transmitter on the top of the building, and watching every television set, it was like 6 television sets, go one by one by one to static, just because it was coming down, and that's where everybody was running their feeds out of, and just watching each TV go to blank and static, and you had one last one that was still showing the tower come down, and then it went offline.
And I heard you earlier talking about that day and being there and the smell of the of the atmosphere that day, and those of us who were in places like Charlotte, we were depending on the accounts and the descriptions of people like you and the news media in New York and Washington and Pennsylvania, and it was just one of those days where, like I said, everybody has a slightly different remembrance, but you know, somebody like you who was there, somebody like me who was, you know, vicariously, unfortunately, experiencing that through people like you.
Oh,
it was just,
we didn't know. Yeah, nobody knew where the next one was going to be. It could have been every city. I mean, it could have been anywhere. It was. Well, let's remember those who have given their lives defending this nation in these next 24 hours, and those who lost their lives for doing nothing more than being innocent victims of a vicious attack that took place 20 years ago tomorrow. Bo Thompson, great to catch up with you. I look forward to Monday, my friend.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com
and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
News Talk 1110-993 WBT, Brent Winterbull Show. President Biden's going to give an address tomorrow, but it's going to be taped. Details on that straight ahead. Let's go on the phones and check in with some of the folks. Blaine is up next. Blaine, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, how's it going?
Going well.
I'm calling about that clip you played of Biden, the idiot Biden, saying that he's going against the governor, and any governor that is telling these schools not to implement mask mandates or vaccine mandates, that they could lose their job if they do. And he called that bullying and saying bullying is wrong. Yet he doesn't seem to have a problem with telling people if you don't implement the vaccine mandate, you will lose your job. Somehow that's not bullying.
Right. That's right. It's incredible, isn't it?
I'm curious if there's any liberal Democrat in America that knows the definition of the word hypocrite.
That's a good point. Here, let me give you a sample of something here. Stay right there. Cut 33, right. President Biden on the unvaxxed. Okay, listen to his tone right here. Go ahead.
This is a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
I mean, he likes to just really stick it to groups of people. This is a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Well, no, actually, it's a pandemic that's affecting everywhere around the world by people who have been vaccinated and some who haven't. I mean, that's...
Yeah. And it's like that little mental midget you played the clip from after the Biden clip. He said that the vaccines, the safe and effective vaccines...
Correct.
How are they effective if my not having the vaccine, my not being vaccinated, is killing the vaccinated?
Yeah.
How is that a safe, effective vaccine? To me, that sounds like a placebo.
Well, this is about power. This is all about power. Stacy, you're up next. Stacy, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm well. Thanks for calling in.
You know, we spoke several weeks ago, and one of the things that I touched on is prior to vaccinations being approved was during their emergency proclamation or whatever you want to call it is that these manufacturers couldn't be held liable.
Right.
Well, they still can't be held liable. And part of the problem with this whole vaccine thing is this. As I've said before, the vaccine is not a cure. We can agree on that. True.
Okay.
The vaccine does not keep you from giving someone else the virus. True?
That's right, yeah.
All right. It's not a proven fact that everyone who gets the vaccine is either less involved with the virus or doesn't get hospitalized or doesn't die. The preliminary data says that people that take vaccines seems to fare better. However, other data that is coming in is that people who have natural exposure to the virus and has natural antibodies is better equipped in the future to fight off variants. So I'm asking the president and anyone out, what is the true benefit of taking the vaccine?
It's because he wants to turn the page. He wants to turn the page. If he checks the boxes and says, okay, everybody got the vaccine, just a hypothetical, right? Okay, I'm done with this now. Now we can move on to the $3.5 trillion human infrastructure bill. Now we can move on to packing the court. As long as Afghanistan is in the headlines, as long as COVID is in the headlines, that's bumming him out. That's dragging him down. And he's got things he's got to do in his mind. And so that's what's driving it. It's the Biden clock. It's nothing else but what he wants when he wants it. And, you know, the fact of the matter is nobody's pointed this out. I mean, I took the shot. People know that. But here's the thing. You don't know based on whatever variant shows up. You got the Mu variant now. Then it'll be, you know, the nuclear variant and whatever whatever letter that they got to attach to whatever. We don't know until those variants show up whether or not the vaccine stands up. I mean, this is the challenge. This is the challenge. And so it's important to understand that there's no certainty in any of the stuff that we do. You can get a flu vaccine and you can still get the flu because it may not match that strain of the flu that's running around the world at a given point. I mean, it's just how it is. There are no 100% total locks. There just aren't.
Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
News Talk 1110 993 WBT. Now we check in with the host of Charlotte at 6. It's going to come up just at 6. Brett Winterble's in for Mark Garrison. Brett, what do you got on tap for tonight? We got a bunch of stuff. We're going to talk about the CRT veto that's taking place there with Governor Roy Cooper. And, of course, we're also going to also talk about this violence, this explosion of violence in our communities. Now we've got to have extra police at the games. And we'll be taking phone calls and thoughts from the folks out there in the audience about September the 11th. And is it wrong to target these college football stadia? Not stadiums, stadia. Oh, that's a good point. We'll talk about all of that straight ahead. All right, Brett, that sounds good. You got it, Brett. See you at 6. Let's go out on the phone and talk to Tyler. Tyler, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Brett. Going well. The main reason Biden's doing all this is that he's trying to change the narrative. He obviously failed miserably in Afghanistan and at our border, and he's trying to get some better ratings or get better numbers. They only gave him good numbers on how he handled the coronavirus, so he's trying to change the narrative so he can try to get better ratings.
Oh,
the bigger issue
big
is,
time.
But here's the bigger issue. It's everywhere. You know, it's in the grocery store. Coronavirus is in the grocery store. It's in the pharmacy. It's in the restaurants. It's everywhere. You're not going to stop it. You're not going to get away from it.
Mm-hmm.
A doctor told me last year, he said, it's not if you're going to get it. He's like, when you're going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
So accept the fact that it's here. It's not going anywhere. And, you know, we've got to start living again.
We do. And that's a vitally important thing. I'm telling you, so much of the problems that we're having in society right now is because people are getting locked in, locked down, and they're miserable. People are starting to feel hopeless, right? Because, I mean, we could all weather the storm. When it was the end of 2019 and into 2020, and then we figured, okay, we'd be past it. We got through the summer of 2020. Now we just got through the summer of 2021. This thing will not go away. And it feels like, I think most of us, Tyler, it feels like the people that are kind of the grown-ups in charge just aren't going to level with the American people. Just answer some questions. When is this done? When does this stop? And don't say when everybody on the planet gets a vaccine. Because you're not going to make enough vaccine for 8 billion people or 12 billion people. Gosh, it's nuts. You guys remember that that drone strike that happened? Remember the drone strike to take out the terrorist back last week? An explosive new investigative report from the New York Times released this afternoon, of course, are burying it on a Friday, revealed that the man targeted by the U.S. military in a drone strike last month, which the Biden administration claimed was to neutralize an ISIS threat, was actually an aid worker who worked for the United States and who had applied for refugee resettlement in the U.S. What the hell is that? The Times report, which came after an exhaustive review of relevant video footage from that day, as well as interviews with numerous individuals on the ground, raised serious doubts about the Biden administration's version of events. So that would be they lied, right? Wouldn't that be they lied. That's a lie. The administration told a lie, including whether explosives were present in the vehicle, whether the driver had a connection to ISIS, and whether there was a second explosion after the missile struck the car. When are we going to get some hearings? Times reporting has identified the driver as Zamari Akhmadi, longtime worker for a U.S. aid group. The evidence, including extensive interviews with family members, co-workers, and witnesses, suggests that his travels that day actually involved transporting colleagues to and from work. So, of course, we hit him with a drone strike because, well, we gotta tell people that we got the guy that was doing the terrorism. Nonsense. Tomorrow, Joe Biden will not deliver a live speech on the 20th anniversary of September 11th. President Biden will not address the nation on September 11th to mark the 20th anniversary of the terrorist attacks. That's been confirmed by the White House. Jen Psaki confirmed that Biden will not deliver live remarks because he was traveling to all three memorial sites to mark the anniversary of the attacks. The events are not set up that way, Psaki said when asked during the daily briefing whether Biden would deliver live remarks, quote, because he's attending an event with several other former presidents and, of course, former prominent officials in the morning in New York in order to get to all the events. It just doesn't work that way. Why can't he do it when he gets back to the White House that night? The White House will release a video of President Biden to mark the occasion. Quote, you will hear from him in the form of a video in advance, or if that will be available that day, I should say. What? Hold on a minute. You know what this is? He's been gaffetastic all week. They want to edit out all the weird references to stuff that didn't happen or isn't happening or hasn't happened yet. Hey, you know, we're going to get the electricity. It's going to be totally clean electricity by 2020. It's going to be unbelievable. It's 2021, sir. It is nearly 2022. Oh, we are well aware it is nearly 2022, Mr. President. The voters are ready to vote. Biden is scheduled to travel to the site of the World Trade Center Memorial in New York, the Flight 93 Memorial in Pennsylvania, and the Pentagon Memorial in Virginia on Saturday. Former President Donald Trump delivered remarks at the Pentagon Memorial to mark 9/11 in 2017 and 2019, and in 2018 and 2020, Trump spoke at the Flight 93 Memorial. But we're going to get a rerun. We're going to get a best of, a previously taped address that will not be live and will be remarkably absent of any gaffes. Have you had enough yet, folks? In all seriousness, have you had enough yet? We got another great hour straight ahead. I'll be in for Mark Garrison. Mark is in for Anna Erickson. I'll be in for Mark Garrison on Charlotte at 6. Straight ahead. Don't go anywhere. I'm Brett Witterbull, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT.